Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Quintessential Listening Poetry. I'm here tonight with a very special guest, Dwayne Voorhees. Dwayne, are you there?
Oh, I'm here.
Okay, fantastic. If you'd like to call in and speak with Dwayne, the call-in number is 646-787-1631. So without further ado, here's Dwayne Voorhees with some of his poetry.
Well, I don't know where to start, but should I start with kind of a long one, or you want something short, or?
Let's see. How about something in the middle?
All right, well, something in the middle. All right, so this is Big Bang. Infinite diamonds sparkle to death. Lax gamete sentries parade. Rival gamete hordes advance. Stars enfold in all dimensions. Gamete storm, gamete walls. Naked singularities expose. A single helmeted hero breaches the pellucid zone. Black holes swallow gravity whole. The singular hero seals the calcium gate, dooms his luckless fellows. Invisible silence reigns in time's pause. Behind the event horizon, gametes merge, then cleave. Gravid blastula enfold in all directions. A universe comes to be. The new eye comes into the world as, why, he looks just like Denny Dimwit, my aunt observes.
Tell us, why do you think poetry is important?
Well, it's part of human nature. There were certainly poets a long time before there were prose writers. I suppose the first writing was, you know, something like accounting lists or something with cuneiform. But there was certainly oral poetry before anybody was writing anything. Whatever value any of the arts have, whether it's painting or whatever, we've obviously been doing those things for an awful long time, so they define us as humans.
It's true, I agree. What are some of the predominant themes of your work as you think about your entire body of work?
That's a really hard question for me to answer. I am pretty directionless, I think.
Okay.
There is some kind of task at hand, which I don't always know what that is as I begin it, and I don't usually know why I begin it, but if I'm lucky, something happens, and something clicks, and something else clicks, and I end up with something, but I try not to repeat myself.
Okay. All right. I understand that. Well, let's share some more of your work.
Okay. Well, this one was intended to be like a sea shanty, but I have really no musical ability, so I will just read it. This is Francis Drake. My hands are caked, and yours are so fine, but somehow they fit trimmed together like ships of the line. Marry me, oh carry me, sign your name mine. I'll be Francis Drake, and you'll be my golden hind. I'll fill up your hold with all of the gold that I can find. All of the gold that I can find. We'll dance naked if you're so inclined. Just billow our charms, wrap our sheets round yardarms entwined. I'll ride you, or I'll guide you, make your name shine. I'll be Francis Drake, and you'll be my golden hind. I'll fill up your hold with all of the gold that I can find. I'll fill up your hold with all of the gold, with all of the gold, with all of the gold that I can find. I'll be Francis Drake, and you'll be my golden hind.
Tell us about the genesis of that poem.
Well, there's not any exciting story about it. I'm interested in history, and Francis Drake is always somebody that has fascinated me. And so it was just putting words together and finding other words that rhymed with them, the like most poems.
For those who don't know, who is Francis Drake?
Well, Francis Drake was an English privateer, Queen Elizabeth the First, not the present one, sent him against Spanish shipping, and so he sailed across the Atlantic with the Golden Hind and captured Spanish ships on his way between South America and Spain, and sacked cities along the South American coast as he went along, and sailed up as far north as California. He was the first European to go there, and then sailed across the Pacific and was raiding Spanish shipping between Peru and the Philippines. And sailed all the way around the world. It was actually the first one to do that because Magellan got killed in the Philippines. He didn't make it. Mm. And as he came into Europe, he raided the Spanish city of Cadiz and then hightailed it back to England and really upset the Spanish government. And of course, he was knighted by Queen Elizabeth II.
Wow. He is a fascinating gentleman. And
yeah.
Maybe I need to read more myself. All right. Please share another of your works.
All right. Well, this one is a little bit longer, and actually it is several smaller poems linked together. I used to do a lot of readings at open mics, and I always had trouble getting small poems to work. About the time the audience started to pay attention, it was over. And so I linked these together as a way of solving that problem. So this is The Beast. And now who's going to drool at your beauty? Who's going to bark through the night? Who's going to bury his bone for you today and howl for your exclusive delight? My head has become a slow white dove. No match, I'm afraid, for the swift, sweet adders of your fingers. Just a flick, flick of the tongue, one whiplash embrace, and already the rich, delicious poison invades my heart. And now who's going to drool at your beauty? Who's going to bark through the night? Who's going to bury his bone for you today? And how for your exclusive delight? Imagine our bodies in braille, finger tongues perusing, teasing out nuances, weighing every significance. We turn over sheet after sheet, each climax foreshadowed, we read ourselves to sleep. And now, who's going to drool at your beauty? Who's going to bark through the night? Who's going to bury his bone for you today and howl for your exclusive delight? I love your body's several smiles as I press my name on all your mouths. I love the way your body smiles in some of your most surprising places. I love the several smiles your body hides. I love the hidden ways your body smiles for me. The Easter egg hunt of your passion. The gift at your Christmas tree. And now, who's going to drool at your beauty? Who's going to bark through the night? Who's going to bury his bone for you today and howl for your exclusive delight? No music's only one finger on one string. The ocean wants a moon to make a tide. Left foot needs right to create a stride. And flight requires flow and wing. It all makes a kind of body sense. Selfish soliloquy, no audience. And now who's going to drool at your beauty? Who's going to bark through the night? Who's going to bury his bone for you today? Who howl for your exclusive delight? Sticky nights with a peppermint-cheeked wonder child, gumdrop breasts and licorice thighs, and acres of sugar cube smile. Even sweets will turn sour if left for overnight. Too many lonely long hours between the passion and delight. And now, who's going to drool at your beauty? Who's going to bark through the night? Who's going to bury his bone for you today and howl for your exclusive delight? I've had my wine, my kiss and my cock, my garden and my trial. I've got my thorns, my thief and my hill, my boulder and my style. Where are my ring, my fief and my rod, my halo and my choir?
That was beautiful, Dwayne.
Well, I hope so. Thank you.
It was beautiful. We'll take a brief break and we'll be right back.
All right.
Telephone number is 646-787-1631. A question for you, Dwayne. When did
Yes.
you first start writing? When did you first start writing, and what made you feel the need to express yourself this particular way?
Well, you know, I suppose like most kids in elementary school and high school, teachers would give assignments, and you have to write a poem or something, and I followed orders. I did all that sort of stuff, and wrote for the high school newspaper. But really, I was in college and sort of bored from studying and looking for something to do. And in the English classes I was taking, you know, there were just all sorts of rules about what you have to do to write a poem and what poems have to be. And I always thought that was a bunch of hooey. So I wrote just to amuse myself and challenge the rules and sort of got into the rhythm of that and found out that I could do a pretty good job of it.
Well, at this
although
point,
most other people didn't much think so.
Okay. All right. What I'd like you to do is to share two of your works.
Okay. Well, just a second. All right. So, this is, her name is Jenny, and many a morn has worn her face. Daybreaks are harlots, all scarlet and huge, with rouge and paste. Some skies all rosy with hosiery, her limbs so prim, so chaste. Some days hemorrhage like courage at our battle place. Other sunrises are sizes too small, whole yards of lace. Silk towns are pretty, but cities of silk go wilt and waste. So, like my Jenny, her any is much, her touch embrace. There is no middle. A little with her will work long ways. Brown coffee mornings come pouring right up from cup to taste. All these sunrisings, dawn icings, like thieves, they leave no trace. So unlike Jenny, so many a morn has worn her face, so many evenings, her leaving goes dim with flimsy haste. And here's another one. Take me in. Take me in, the poet said. Take me in, the prophet hid. Take me in, the poet prayed. Take me in, no banker paid. Take me in, the soldier fled. Sink or swim, the lawyer pled. Take me in, the poet said. Take me in. A woman did. Make me warm, the woman cried. Safe and warm. The poet sighed. Words are thin, he did reply. Weak and thin, but yet I'll try. Weak and thin, but yet I'll try. In the bin, by page, in the bin, the books were laid. Inch by inch, were set ablaze. Line by line, the match was lit. Word by word, the poems all went. Now I'm warm, the woman said, safe from harm. But poet's dead. Poet dead? Poet dead? He lives on inside her head. Words go on inside her head.
Many poets have different methods for writing. Some write on paper and then transmit to blog. Others type their work out in Word and then transfer. What is your preferred method of writing?
Well, my preferred method is with a pen and a piece of paper, although sometimes I do compose on a computer. Oftentimes, though, I'm doing it when I'm not even anywhere close to a computer, and it's easy to scribble words on a menu or something.
All poets have several words that come up over and over again, or sentences that they just can't help but use in their work. What are three of your absolute favorite words?
Well, I guess I would be embarrassed if I could answer that. I really try to avoid any kind of mannerism like that. Words may repeat themselves in a single poem, or you know, lines may reiterate themselves in a single work, but I really try not to ever do that again.
Tell us more about that.
Well, to me, writing a poem is as much of kind of a challenge as it is anything else. As soon as I get a purpose, which I generally don't have when I begin. But as soon as I discern a purpose, I see if I can follow that purpose all the way through in some kind of a meaningful and, I hope, entertaining way. But then once I've done that, I've met the challenge. I don't see any particular reason of doing that again. And I really try hard not to.
I know that you've written a book, Love's Autobiography. Tell us about your book.
Well, actually that is part of a longer book. About 2 years ago, I was invited to participate in a poetry festival in India. And en route to there, a publisher in a different Indian city that I was passing through asked to meet me. And so through him, this is Kriti Sengupta in Calcutta. I sent him a manuscript. And like I say, it was really much longer than that, but I assume for commercial purposes, he published about half of it. And so I'm still looking for a way to get the other half published. The idea behind it, though, is that it is kind of an autobiography. Essentially, it begins with a young man, an adolescent, and a very romantic kind of attachment. And then through a series of other lovers as he ages and has different kinds of affairs, including marriage and middle age and older. And so I don't think it's philosophical at all, but it does address the many, many different ways that people go through love throughout their lives. It doesn't stay the same.
So Love's Autobiography. If you had to convince a friend or colleague to read your book, which is available on Amazon.com.
Yes, it sure is.
Tell?
Like all
what
of our refrigerators and everything else.
That's true. If you had to convince a friend or colleague to read your book, what would you share with them about the book?
Well, excuse me, the weather has kind of gotten to me, I'm a little hoarse and wheezy. Last night we had a play, and it really took a lot of energy out of me. It's probably easier if you are directly with somebody and you can show them a poem and you can get their responses to it. To sell it to a stranger, that's much more difficult. There are a lot of poetry books out there, and there are a lot of self-published poetry books out there. And my general opinion is that most people don't want to pay the same price for, 50 poems as they're going to pay for a romance novel that is 10 times that long. So I don't understand the economy of it at all. But I would just tell them that these are really, 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 really good poems and you should read them.
Well, what makes a poem good?
It depends on the poem.
Okay.
So some poems are good because they express some feeling. This may be a very unique personal feeling. It may be a more universal kind of feeling that people can share. Some kind of deep truth is probably involved. But there are also really good poems just about, somebody walking across the street and seeing a bird on a limb or something, and somehow it comes out as a very, perhaps a haiku, perhaps some other kind of probably short poem. So what makes a good poem really depends on the poem itself, but the reader's reaction to it.
Well,
There are an awful lot of acclaimed poems that have never appealed much to me, and there are lots of poems by people nobody's ever heard of that I think are just really wonderful. So I'm not sure there's any answer that will apply in all cases.
Oh, understandable. Well, I'd like to hear another good poem, so please share another.
All right. So this one, pretty short. This is What Wanton. Which village chemist took us from his shelf and mixed us with his pestle, put us in pots, and sold us to consumers with their milk? They took us with cereal and dyed in knots. And which astrologer played with ourselves his odd game of celestial connect the dots? He made the moon turn the tide into whales against glittery crystal chandelier yachts.
What style of poetry do you prefer? Freestyle, rhyming, haiku, and why?
Well, I suppose that some time ago I would have told you that I really don't like rhyming poems, but it turns out that I write a lot of them. It's connective tissue. It's a way of moving the poem along. I do write freer kinds of verse that don't have any rhyme at all. But I think I write far fewer of those than I imagined that I did. In terms of haiku or sonnets or any of the traditional forms, I mostly dislike the idea of somebody imposing a structure on me. And mostly I avoid trying to write those kinds of poems, although sometimes I do.
Well, speaking of that, what do you view as being the role of poetry in a modern society?
It's the same role that it has played in every society. It is a way of expressing oneself, trying to find the wonder beyond oneself, sharing that vision with other people, uniting around it, appealing to people's senses and humanity.
I like that.
And there's more
like
of it now than there ever was in the past.
That's true. As we think
everybody
about the past,
everybody talks about how poetry is dead or dying, and maybe in a commercial sense that's largely true, but in a communicative sense it is certainly not true.
Well, speaking of history, please name three of your favorite historical poets.
Oh, well, that varies from time to time, but I like E. Cummings, and I like Leonard Cohen, and traces of their writings show up from time to time in my work, but I really try to avoid that. If I catch myself doing it, that's usually a time to start all over again and excise that.
Well, please share some more of your work.
Well, all right. This is And Purple Prose. The raw sources of a pipefitter's dream are simple. Nuts and nipples and couplings and screws. And I'm just a poet in search of a muse. Just a sea-starved seaman in need of a cruise. A poet needs a muse to sweeten his songs. So won't you play sugar if I play tongue? Let me lap you up like a cup of cream. Slyly, she replied, silver. I own my own eye. I'm here to hear rhymes. But actors need prompters to feed them their cues. For rams to have lambs, they first must have ewes. Even six of dynamite require a fuse. For to fill my verse up, rim, barrel, and bung, let me borrow your breath to stuff my lungs. I don't want my songs to out-silence mimes. But slow, she answered me, orange. Silver, she handed me. Poets need gold. And orange you gave me. It won't balance my blues. It's like finding the Times with the ads but no news. We're going to church to worship the pews. Poet needs muse to keep his thoughts young. The muse is the clothesline on which are hung poets' pants and fancies before they get cold. Oh, my silent, unrhymed diamond.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Dwayne Voorhees, and we're listening to his beautiful, beautiful work. Poets hail from all over the world. Where do you hail from?
Well, I hail from Germantown, Ohio. That's a small town near Dayton. And when I was in sixth grade in school, I moved to an even smaller town 4 miles away. It's called Farmersville, a very descriptive name for the community.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I left there, and now I'm back. I have moved back here with my wife and son, and we'll be here for a while yet.
Right. Now, I know that you've lived other places in the world. Where have you lived?
Well, I lived an awful long time. Well, I that makes it sound like it's bad, doesn't it? It
no.
Wasn't really an awful time. But I lived in Korea for probably 3 decades or so. At one time, half of my life. And for most of that time, I was teaching classes to soldiers and their dependents for the University of Maryland. And then I lived in Japan for a few years doing the same thing. Prior to that, I'd lived in Canada for a few years selling encyclopedias door to door.
All right. I remember being a little boy when the Encyclopedia Man would knock on our door.
Right.
I need to write a poem about that.
Yeah, you should.
How has your
I think there was a comedy skit. You know, someone was knocking the door and the guy wouldn't open, and said, no, I don't want any burglars in my house. And the guy on the other side just kept insisting. You know, well, he kept saying he didn't want an encyclopedia salesman to come in. The guy said, well, I'm not an encyclopedia salesman. I'm a burglar. And then the guy opened the door and let him in.
I like that. I like that. How has your travel or your travels informed your work? How have they informed your poetry? Who are you as a result of your travels?
Well, I grew up in a couple of really small towns, and travel has certainly exposed me to lots of other kinds of people and other kinds of architecture and other kinds of art. So I'm not sure I could say that it has had any specific effect, but clearly it has broadened my outlook.
Well, please share another of your works.
Well, okay. Confessions. Everyone's a politician. Everyone's a journalist. And none of us has inhibitions when it comes to tales to twist. I went to see my physician in her office inside my tomb for practice. She writes out prescriptions just to kill the kids and their wounds. My preacher makes his confession to the girls who are blonde and young. He lays on his hands as his mission and exhibits the gifts of his tongues. Professors write dissertations in order to hide all the facts. And if you want real information, well, you needn't even ask. At open mic, that thin co-ed that said she hungered for new verse, Phil, said I, you're a poet. She stars, though swallowed complete works. Was Jesus tacked to an easel so Romans could paint him later? They staged all the acts of apostles just to build wings for their theaters. And everyone had truth to twist till they convinced me I was cured. But when I asked, my psychiatrist sneered, "Why, no, I'm not even bored."
Do you think that you were meant to be a poet?
Oh, I guess so. I never would have thought so when I was young,
mm-hmm.
but I think that's the case.
And that is due to what?
It's due to working at that craft for a long time and working to improve it and finding that although it can be a real torturous kind of occupation, it's entertaining.
Yes,
the challenge is real. The overcoming of the challenge is an eventful moment.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought that I would be a writer, but I always figured that I would be a novelist. I don't seem to have too much talent along those lines.
Do you belong to a writing group?
When I lived in Seoul,
mm-hmm.
When I lived in Seoul, I was kind of a charter member of a group that eventually called itself the San Artist, the Seoul Artist Network. We had lots of open mics, and for a while there was an international writers group that I was regularly attached to. But no, currently I don't belong to anything. I do have a daily poetry blog, however, with mainly poets from all over the world, and that keeps me pretty busy.
And the title of the blog?
It's Duane's Poetry. Instead of P-R-O-E-T-R-Y, it's P-O-E-T-R-E-E. blogspot.com. So I want to warn everybody, apparently there's another site called Duane's Poetry, the way it's supposed to be spelled, and there's no resemblance between the two sites.
All right. You know, poets and writers write for a myriad of reasons. Some write primarily to speak a message to their audience.
Right.
Others write because to stay silent is not an option. Why do you write?
Well, I don't see really the difference between those two points of view.
Okay.
Silence can be an option, but not if you are a poet or a painter or a musician. the whole purpose is the need to communicate something. And you might be communicating something that you don't even know that you're communicating, but there's still that need to do so.
What is the measure of success as a poet?
Well, it certainly isn't what Samuel Johnson would have considered. He didn't think anybody should ever write unless he got paid for it.
Okay.
But poets often write for not getting paid for it. Some poets have done very, very well for themselves. In my particular case, the one time I ever got paid, I got $50 once. So I've been writing poems for 50 years, so that's like a dollar a year that I've been paid for my efforts. But the reward is internal, first of all, actually having accomplished that purpose of writing that poem, and then something that you can't really expect or demand, finding someone or a bunch of someones who respond to it in a positive way. Not necessarily an adulatory way, but there is a connection there.
Yes, it is. Well, please share some more of your work.
Well, okay. Usually when we had our open mics in Seoul, it was in the setting of a bar, and people would be playing pool and drinking, and so it was always something of a struggle to get them to pay attention to you. This is something that always seemed to work with an audience, though. This is something called liquid. I thought I was lucid in pot pong, though maybe I was hallucinating when I thought I saw this maiden blowing the vagina smoke ring blues. She came up to me when she was through and said, "Do you smoke?" And I said, "Well, not like you." And then in my ear she whispered, "Let's get liquid. Oh, let's get liquid." So we went to her pharmacy upstairs. She took my prescription and filled it. She had that electric texture of velvet when rubbed against the grain, and I felt it. The flower entered the air and filled it. Lance shivered against shield as we tilted. My farmer found her furrow and tilled it. I opened her book and I shelved it. Her passion, a pink open pistachio, I unshelled it. She made my Johnny Walker red, and then she swilled it. She raised my engine and derailed it. She measured my beat, and she held it. She climbed my steeple, and she belled it. She stamped my package, and she mailed it. She blazed my sequoia, and she felled it. I plugged in my tool, and I drilled it. I hammered her board, and she nailed it. She read my fantasy and fulfilled it. Applied my blueprint as she built it. She fitted my Nino and she sailed it over the edge of the sea. She propelled it. Oh, I heard her shout it. Or maybe that was me. And then our substances melded, congealed together. We were welded. But that was the moment we melted. The orchid exploded and wilted. And she slid loose, she slipped free, and we drifted. Oh, we were liquid. And I thought I was lucid in Bangkok, but maybe I was hallucinating.
Wow. There seems to be an underlying eroticism to your work. Maybe that's just my mind.
Yeah, sometimes. It is the theme of the book we talked about a few minutes ago, but that's not always the case.
Okay. All right. Has your idea of what poetry is changed since you began writing poems?
Well, before I wrote poems or before I started to seriously write poems, I thought that they were silly and they didn't get to the point. They made lots of allusions that most people wouldn't understand, and they were repetitive, and the rhythms were boring, and I wasn't much interested in them. But as I started to write them, since I didn't want those things to be true, I found out that there are lots and lots of different ways of writing a poem, and they can all be explored, and new ones can be invented. And it has been just a long time pursuit of seeing how many of these things I can accomplish.
Well, please share another.
Well, let me see here. Okay, so one that has a complete lack of eroticism. This is actually a mashup between the Declaration of Independence and Karl Marx.
Okay.
And so what I did is I proceeded through the two of them and would go for a word or a phrase and then go to the other text and try to put them together in a coherent way. So it's called the Declaration Manifesto Palimpsest. When, in the course of human events, when in the course of development, it becomes necessary for one people, class distinctions have disappeared and all production has been concentrated to dissolve the political bonds in the hands which have connected them with another of a vast association and to assume of the whole nation the public power among the powers of the earth will lose its political character, the separate and equal station to which the laws, political power, of nature properly so called and of nature's God is merely the organized power, entitle them of one class a decent respect for the opinions of mankind. For opposing another requires that the proletariat, during its contest with the bourgeoisie, is compelled that they should declare by the force of circumstances the causes to organize itself as a class which impel it by means of a revolution. It makes itself then to separation. We, the ruling class, hold these, and as such, truth to be self-evident, that all men sweeps away by force are created, equal the old conditions of production, that they are endowed, then it will, along with these conditions, by their creator, have swept away with certain unalienable rights the conditions that among these are life for the existence, liberty, and the pursuit of class antagonisms of happiness, that to secure these rights, and of the classes generally, governments are instituted among men and will thereby have abolished its own supremacy, driving their just powers from the consent as a class of the governed, that whenever in place of the old bourgeois society, any form of government becomes, with its classes and destructive of these ends and class antagonisms, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish. We shall have it, an association, and to institute new government in which the free development, laying its foundation of each on such principles, is the condition for free development and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem of all most likely to affect their safety and happiness, prudence, indeed, will dictate.
Uh, I'm soaking that one in. Very powerful work.
It sounds like a much more of a Marxist tract than a Jeffersonian one, but that's just the way they wrote.
Right. All right. We'll be right back. Some poets are also active in other creative areas. What are some of your favorite non-poetry or literary or literature activities?
In order to overcome a great deal of shyness when I was young, I did a lot of work on stage. Last night in the community, we did a play, and I'm glad that's over now.
All right.
But I lack musical ability. Throughout my life, people have told me to be quiet when I tried to sing. I'm not coordinated enough to dance. Painting hasn't been anything that I've ever been able to do successfully. So I'm left with writing and performing.
You know, as we think about writing and performing, and writing specifically, and poetry even more specifically, what goes into the concoction we call a poem? What makes up a poem?
It could be something that is only meant to be read and is very difficult to communicate in an oral sense, probably because it lacks the traditional elements of rhyme and rhythm, and it's hard for an audience to follow along. But there are certainly oral poems that are structured around those elements. They're easier to remember. They're easier for the audience to pay attention to. Some can fit in both spheres comfortably, but usually there's a big dichotomy between those two methods of expression.
You mentioned that you were both a writer and performer. What is the relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice, if there is a relationship between the two?
The written voice is much more considered. The speaking voice is a lot more hesitant. The writing voice, at some point I know what I'm going to say, and so it's just a point of proceeding along some guideline I set for myself. If I'm speaking, I don't know what I'm going to say next. It could be anything. It's harder for me to organize my thoughts in a spontaneous manner. Especially if I'm writing prose, it's always been really easy for me to stay on message and to know what I'm doing without much need for revision. But because it's on paper, it's always easy to revise. When you're talking, you can't go and take it back again. It's out there. You've done it.
Yes, I agree. Where do you write?
Well, excuse me?
Where do you write? Where?
Where do I write? Okay.
Yeah.
Wherever I am.
Okay.
A lot of times the writing process will take hold of me, and end up doing a lot of the writing instead of sleeping. And so I might be in the bedroom or I might go someplace else so I don't bother anybody. So I'm sitting at the kitchen table, or if I am writing on the computer, I do that sometimes. I'll go to a desk and turn the computer on. But sometimes I'm sitting in the car waiting for somebody, or I'm sitting on a park bench and just kind of hanging around, and something will occur to me and I will start jotting it down.
You were on the verge of closing out, but I would like to ask you to please share one more with us. I've enjoyed listening to your work tonight.
All right. So this is the cock handler. I prepare the sacrament. Gingerly, my forefinger thumb probes protuberant spurs, a search for hidden tenderness. I work my way carefully up and hold the head with firm caress, stem it side to side, invoke its beauty's legend. Sudsy hands stretch upright the cock and then begin soft pistonic strokes till consecration is complete. Then I dash the pecker with clear water and toss, and into the pit thuds the rooster. The unreflective mirrors of its eyes pierce implacably the depthlessness of the other rooster's eyes. Their twin immobility holds the entire vicinity in breathless pause. The pair of rusted springs await fury's sudden unleash.
When people hear your work, I'm sure they usually want more. What's next for you as a poet?
Once again, could you repeat the question, please?
Yes. When people hear your work, I'm sure they want more. What's next for you as a poet?
What's next for me as a poet? Okay.
Yes.
I would like to complete the other part of Love's autobiography. I'm also working on another collection of poems with a variety of subjects rather than just one single subject. I have some poems from the Korean and from Chinese, so I keep myself busy, even though I don't write regularly. I'm not one of those people who has a schedule or something. I don't write every day. I don't write every week. I write as I am inspired to write, but I don't make a habit of it.
Well, I'd like to thank you for being a guest on Quintessential Listening Poetry, and I'd like to invite you to come back, if you'd like to come back.
Sure, anytime. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, I enjoyed it tonight. It was really nice, really uplifting, really. I had fun. So I want to thank
you
again.
Well, good. I certainly did.
Well, great. I'm glad. Well, all right, then. Have a great evening, Duane.
And thank you again. And I hope we can do this again.
Oh, yes, of course we will. Of course we will. And to my listening audience, tune in next week when Kim Bailey will be our guest. So this is Michael Anthony Ingram signing off.
Are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. Hold on 1 second, and we're off the air.
Okay.
All right. Are you still there?
Yeah, yeah. The music was over, so I thought you were done.